Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I'm going to say everybody must have survived because stating the obvious here, everybody is listening, doing the things that they normally do on a Monday. But anyway, I'll get into news, weekends, editorializing, and follow up on last week's focus regarding the changing of our culture in a minute. But as you know, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you also know that this is the show that does provide you with the information and hopefully the motivation necessary to get us to get states to start standing up, not nullifying, but standing up and taking back their constitution and enforcing it to the letter. We're not talking about an Article 5 amendment process, which will actually make the entire Constitution vulnerable. The states inherently have the authority to demand that the federal government comply to their contract, and they have mechanisms and tools to do so. But you already know that. So the number to call in, if you want, I've got a lot of stuff to go through, and I know I promised kind of like an open line Monday, but maybe we'll do open line Tuesday or what have you. But if you do happen to call and I'm not able to pick up, it's not because I didn't want to pick up. It may be because it's happened before, and I've actually called those people who've called. And, you know, apologized and said, you know, by all means, call again or let me know and, be happy to have you on. But again, the number to call in is 215-867-8255. That's our number for today. It is also 215-TOP-TALK. So as I was saying, I do want to get back into the whole purpose and the drive and how our culture had been changed from the 40s and 50s, because if you understand, the mechanism of education was taken over at the early part of the 20th century, the very end of the 1800s. And the fact was that they weren't getting successful enough. They did not have the successes they needed. So they needed to institute some major radical changes. So they basically prepared us for what was necessary in making that cultural change. I also want to say, I apologize. Last Friday, I was really tired trying to get through everything. And I know I literally bombed you with the literal word, literally, way too many times. And I apologize for that. It's when you get tired, you kind of start using a crutch word. And I can tell when other people are tired because they start using a crutch word. And that was what happened. I apologize. So let me just move forward because, like I said, there's a lot of stuff to go through. I'll even quickly grovel. You know we need your help. Email me info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and or sign up with theconstitutionclub.ning.com, and that will help get you engaged so that you can become a constitutional crusader with the rest of us. I kind of like that term. Anyway, I do check the news, and I did check the news. And, oh, by the way, there's no sign that the federal government is going to relinquish any of their tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers that they have usurped from we the people and the states. So we better stop, wasting time, better start getting focused, because we don't have a lot of time left. And some of the stuff I hope to cover today will kind of be some of that. And we'll get into that. But, I mean, I got to give you my reaction because I really didn't watch the Super Bowl. I was a little bit turned off by the whole social justice thing a couple of years ago. And a friend of mine did record it. And I happened to actually catch just around the halftime. I just wanted to see what the score was. And the reason being is because I was actually rooting for the Patriots. I didn't want to call it out there, but I'll tell you why in just a second here. But I actually caught the fact that the NFL has come right out and they've become the champions of social justice. Now, I ask you, just take the second. Just you go and you take the second in time that it takes for you to actually go and Google, and you Google, and I'm going to do it right now, social justice. And if you do that, Google will come up with basically a definition right at the very top, a dictionary. Just put social justice in. And right at the top, it says, justice in terms of the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. That is communism, my friends, within a society. And the NFL has become the champions of communism in our society. So they're nationalists, all right. They're statists, all right. Maybe that's why they took the brand the National Football League instead of the American Football League, because it is the antithesis of the American ideals and ideologies that this nation was founded upon. But all of that said, I'm going to actually start exploiting that, because I'm going to start replaying those types of things as I can get away with it, because I know that they have copyrights on that crap. And that's okay. I would love to see them come after me as long as I just use short little snidbits, 30 seconds or what have you. And so as long as they come after me, then I'm okay with the fact of, you know, here's the big multi-billion dollar business that is trying to squash somebody that's pointing them out to be communists. But here's the interesting thing. The reason I wanted the Patriots to win was not because the name Patriots. I mean, you know, the Kraft family is a bunch of socialists as well. They're not for individual liberty and sovereignty, and they're all a part of the big Borg. Maybe they are good people, and they're not as bad as some others. I mean, is there, you know, it's kind of like the light beer and the beer. I mean, it all has alcohol in it, right? The point is that I know that the NFL has been struggling. The reason they went into LA was to actually expand their market. Here is a city that has, I mean, what is it, 30 million in the greater Los Angeles area. I mean, it's a huge city, and it's an indictment that city has the size of population that it does, and it does not have any NFL football teams, or it hadn't had it at any NFL football teams for years and years and years, right? And so here they've brought two teams. Not just one, two teams to hopefully, you know, be able to saturate that market. And they had to have winning seasons to really become successful at that. It's not like any of these teams came with a real big national following. The Patriots have a big following. The Oakland Raiders have a big following. The Jets used to have a big following. Dallas Cowboys, they have a big following. And so the Chargers? Now, the Rams were kind of popular, you know, when they were a part of L.A., but they made a huge mistake by moving out. And I'm just going to say they kind of poked the people in the eye in L.A., and they really needed a win. And I was telling people that I actually predict an L.A. win, you know, whether it be the Chargers or, and this was early on, due to the fact that LA needs to have a real, you know, some wind in their sails. So they need to win a Super Bowl and prove that they've got a viable team, that, you know, they're going places and they're going to get people to start coming out, because that's how you get your revenue pumping, right? Well, you don't pump revenue when you lose a Super Bowl. And there is also the Super Bowl curse and everything else. So the reason I was hoping for the Patriots to win had really more to do with, you know, watching the NFL continue to struggle in that market as well as struggle across the board. The fact that they actually came out and was honest enough to tell people that they are champions for communism by, you know, pushing social justice, then a case closed. I mean, they did the work for me. All you have to do is enter two words into Google, social justice. Make them change what they are fighting for, because that's what they do. That's exactly what the statist communists do, or the Platonists. They change their label so all of a sudden they're ahead of the curve, so that as soon as we get exposed to communism or socialism and those types of terms, then the people go, oh, okay. Then all of a sudden they have to change because people now have a bad impression. But what is this new thing? Antifa, what is that? And I'm bringing that up because that's been in the news, and we need to talk about that as well. But let me kind of really quickly go over this the Civil Rights Museum, and I want to lead into this with communism. If you understand communism, communism is the antithesis of civil rights. People do not have civil rights. You become a slave. Whatever is best for the state is what is best. It's your personal rights. You have no individual rights. You have no inalienable rights. The state dictates what is best. So anybody that wants to become a champion of civil rights would not be a communist. And I ask people, because there is a bus in the museum with Rosa Parks sitting in the front seat, and I understand that she was fighting racism at the time, but she was also a card-carrying communist. So it's almost like here we've got this champion for supposedly civil rights, but actually everything that she stood for was the antithesis of civil rights. So it's kind of like an oxymoron. Isn't that the definition of an oxymoron? I would think so. Anyway, let's talk a little bit when we come back about the results of the shutdown and the State of the Union address tomorrow, and we will be right back after these two promos to talk about that. So please stay tuned, and we will get into the Trump State of the Union. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so I think many people want to make some assertions on what Trump's going to do. I think he's already played out this national emergency, but some people are speculating that, you know, there's no way he wants to use leverage. I was really hoping that he would let the government shut down again. And I truly believe it would be constitutional genius on his part to shut the government down and start using EOs to literally get rid of. That's one way to actually start cutting government and the cost of it by actually calling it out as unconstitutional powers. And then as the president say, show me Congress, show me Supreme Court where we have these enumerated powers. And literally force them to point out that they are literally, and I'm using that word again, literally, they are following what is called the annotated Constitution, and that the fact is they are violating our Constitution because nowhere during the Constitutional Republic's history did the states delegate the authority and the power to the federal government to sidestep the Constitution and create their own annotated Constitution, incorporating the government and all of these other things. They cannot do anything without the authority of the states to delegate that to them. So a lot of people are saying, oh, well, and I've heard people, they made these presumptions that with martial law, they were able to do things that were necessary. Well, sorry, martial law doesn't clearly do that. You can't change your form of government. You can't do those types of things. The states clearly didn't authorize that. And even more importantly, and that's why I want to get into martial law with you, because as they described martial law, the process, as well as the militia in that process during the ratification debates, it really shuts down their argument because the two are synonymous. They have to be deploying because you got to understand, the militia was for internal defense. That's why they put that into the Constitution. They didn't put a standing army for defending the motherland. It was the militia that was clearly identified. But because they neglected the militia and started building up a standing army in direct violation of the spirit of the Constitution, they literally, I'm using that word again, so I'm hypersensitive to literally because I really went overboard last Friday. What they did was they started instituting different powers and they used negligence and omitted funding and supporting the militia and making sure that the militia stayed attuned and abreast with what they needed to do because they quickly abandoned it for the Civil War. And the other thing is the whole Civil War was not really a Civil War. It was the South made no attempts to invade any northern state. So there was no invasion. There was no rebellion. It was just literally a secession. People go, well, you can't secede. Actually, you can secede, and the Federalist Papers talk about it. Contract law talks about it. If the contract is being violated, then either party has the right to be able to step out of that contract when one part, even if it is a minute part, even if it is being breached, you have the authority to step out of that contract at that point in time once it's been breached. Well, when the South stepped out and they seceded, that was not just because of a small breach. It was literally a lot of northern aggression. Now, I supported the northern aggression on it regarding slavery, but not the military action. I believe what they had to wait and what they should have done, and I've said this before, I truly believe that Lincoln should have emancipated slaves at the very beginning before he even started what they call the Civil War. And what he should have done was said, okay, we're going to, expand or basically apply the Monroe Doctrine, and we're going to eradicate slavery in the Western Hemisphere. And guess what? We're going to start with these southern states. That would have changed the whole outlook of the Civil War. But instead, historians like to call it a civil war, but if you look at the definition of what civil war is, it has nothing to do with what happened here in America when the South seceded. So anyway, I digress. But clearly, the federal government has a constitutional responsibility to protect our borders from internal, not from internal, but from an invading force, whether that be an invading force of poverty. Our culture must be protected. If you have open borders, then we will lose our culture. And that's exactly what they've been trying to do. And that's what's going on in Europe today. And so if you read in Article 1, you'll find that the federal government has a responsibility to provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States and to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. Both of those things they have failed egregiously on. They also guarantee to protect each state against invasion. That's in Article 4. So he's got more than enough precedent as well as authority to actually step in and say, we need to stop this. In addition, the federal government is supposed to ensure that no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress who has engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort, I'm quoting here, given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. That's in the 14th Amendment. He has the power and authority to actually go after some of these congressmen and senators who have been crying for open borders, say, we've got to let these people in. We've got to let these people in. No walls. We keep it going. Keep coming in. Obama should be arrested because it was his administration that was actually putting propagation of propaganda in Central America and other Latin American states to literally tell them, overly sensitive again, but that's what Toastmaster. If you're not a Toastmaster, you should become one because they teach you how to become sensitive of those types of things. Anywho, Obama's administration was instrumental and integral in starting this whole calamity because they were telling people, just come here. If you get here, you can claim asylum and we'll put you on the dole. Now, one of the things that we really need to do is we need to shut down the welfare state. And Trump can do that with his EO because it is an unconstitutional power that they are exercising. They have no jurisdiction and they have no authority to be able to tax us to be able to take from the rich and give to the poor. That is not in the Constitution. That's the Communist Manifesto. So Just to be clear here, I wanted to kind of clear the air. Trump has all of the constitutional power behind him in this. There is nothing in the Constitution that says, give me your poor, and we're going to open our borders and we're going to give away our future so that we can be overrun by you. Really? I mean, come on. That's not in the Constitution. That may be what the French put on the Statue of Liberty. But that's not within our constitutional framework. That is not our principles. So what are you expecting Trump to say tomorrow? Are you expecting him to, I'm hoping that he actually really names names and points out their hypocrisy and, goes through. And actually, it'd be great if there was a website at the White House or what have you that he actually has all of the history with all the little videos and everything else on each of these culprits behind this so that he can literally call them all out and say, come on to thewhitehouse.gov and you can see, the hypocrisy at play here and you can actually see how your Constitution and how your republic and your sovereignty and liberty has been placed in jeopardy because these idiots that you keep electing are actually doing these things to you. And, so please go come to our website and check it out. That would be great, wouldn't it? I mean, it would really be, I could actually see him doing that because he's I don't want to say notorious, but he has no reservation about calling somebody out, Lion Ted or Crooked Hillary and so forth. I mean, he's really quick to do that. So that, and those types of things can kind of latch on. But what I want to do, and I don't have time to do all of this, but what I wanted to do was kind of go back through what we kind of talked about, what I focused on regarding abortion and how that was a part of this big agenda in changing our culture. That in itself has had a huge impact. I don't know if you've looked at the statistics, how many millions of people have been killed because of the abortion mills that have been unleashed here in America. We're talking probably in the magnitude of billions throughout the world. As a matter of fact, I've actually had those numbers, and I need to go back through that show because I could give it to you in the magnitude of billions. But what I do want to talk about when we come back from the break, I'm about a half minute from the break. I want to talk about how last week I really wanted to lay out this argument of how our culture has been changed by communists or whatever you want to call them. I like to call them Platonists because that really gives the true label to the origin of this ideology that we know of on paper. Because Plato, in pinning the statist argument in his Republic, he clearly points out how the state has to control the propaganda, how they have to control education, they have to control every facet of our lives so that they can take over and control us to a point where they actually have this, I'll call it nobility, that they're actually making society better. But that's absolutely a pipe dream. It literally is a pipe dream. And so with that, I'm going to come back and talk to you about how this kind of all started and the results of this and why we're in this situation. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So, you know, one of the things I didn't do is when I was talking about the Super Bowl, I forgot to mention, what's it going to take? Because here, corporations are literally poking us, our society, our way of life in the eye. So what's it going to take to get you involved in standing up? Because I'm telling you, we don't need everybody, just those of you listening to this show to start taking a stand. That's all. It doesn't take, and you'll actually see that as we just get a small, remember the Revolutionary War was fought by a very minute portion of the people here. But the outcome of that was so tremendous. I mean, the impact that that had on those few people's lives that were committed to the cause, it was just huge. And it has lasted as the greatest experiment in the annals of mankind. So in the annals of mankind, as this experiment moved forward, there was obviously attempts in undermining us. And those undermining attempts really began, like I said, at the end of the 1800s, early 20th century, when they took over our education system. And they had to slowly prepare us for being willing to accept some of the changes that were coming. And so there was just no way, if they came out and said, we want to start introducing abortion, sexual promiscuity, you know, redefining marriage as to alternative lifestyles, and we want to start injecting secularism, religion, and actually get rid of religion. We want to get the Americans believing that they're entitled to health care, housing, and all of these things. That, you know, it's no longer a society of opportunity. It is a society that, you know, the government mandates that everybody's entitled to these things. Had they come out honestly and said, we are here to impose communism upon you, then, you know, it would have been, you know, quickly rejected. Remember McCarthyism. McCarthy's concept of communism in the United States, he was absolutely right. I do understand that he was, you know, he was kind of a fascist, but he understood the threat. Let me ask you this. McCarthy isn't God, but he was literally trying to remove the threat to our society. We have to understand that communism has no place here. It doesn't have a place here. There was a reason why they did make it illegal. We had other things that were illegal, and look at what's happened to us. The question I have is, do you believe, if you're Christian, let's just work with somebody that might have this Christian slant. Do you believe in heaven, Satan, and sin is welcome? Or do you believe that those concepts and those practices are, you know, not allowed? I think some people would use the term, no unclean thing can enter into heaven, you know, something like that. You know, there are places for standards, and there are needs to have standards. And America actually had those. And most people don't understand that the reason why America was so great before is because it relied upon religion to do most of the heavy work. It relied upon religion and the local communities to do the heavy lifting of all the other stuff, such as education, healthcare, humanitarian aid, or if you want to call it compassionate service, you know, taking care of the healthcare, the housing, the welfare, you know, education. All of those types of things were done by religion and the community services that religion provides. So I'm here to tell you that when they started injecting into our education system on the premise that they were going to reduce teenage pregnancies and unwanted pregnancies, that they were going to inject sex education, that was the camel's nose into the tent. And when they got the camel's nose into the tent, my friends, it was all over, because what supposedly was being done by supposedly good conservatives who were saying, well, we need to do this. And those good conservatives who accepted the compromise in trying to address the problem, they literally provided the lethal dose that was going to, I'll call it the demise, because if you look at where we're at today, getting that, all of this back is going to be a miracle. Getting people to come back. I will tell you, we can save the Constitution. I don't know if we can save the morality. I leave that to other good religious leaders and organizers and those types of things. I'm not here to, and you may think I'm here to preach, I'm not. I'm really here to preach about the Constitution, to educate you that your inalienable rights are a threat, and that you have all the power necessary within your state to literally stop this flood of tyranny and arbitrary rule and being oppressed and actually letting them throw us into global communism. I'm hoping and praying that you, the listener, and those who you talk to begin to understand the consequences of electing immoral, godless politicians. I know we're not supposed to have religious tests, but we need to have at least morals and standing behind our commitment of supporting the oath that we are supposed to take. Clearly in Article 6, there is an oath that's required of all politicians, even the Supreme Court. But go look what the oath that the Supreme Court takes. They do not swear an oath to the Constitution. They never amended the Constitution, but it clearly says that they're supposed to. So they've put themselves above the Constitution is what they're trying to say, and they're not. They're not above the Constitution, and they need to be held accountable. They know that if they were supposed to be supporting the Constitution, they took that oath that if all of a sudden their rulings were deemed anti-Constitution, such as supporting ideologies like communism, Islam, and those types of things that are anti-individual liberty, anti-individual sovereignty, and those things that the Constitution guarantees, then I'm telling you, they probably realized that they would have been able to be, what is the word, impeached and removed. So I'm just giving it to you that we have the ability. We have all the tools. We have everything we need. It's just a matter of literally getting people to start realizing that they have the ability to do this. So the question I always ask is, what is it going to take? I mean, if you start realizing that we're in this state because there have been a lot of collusion and a lot of planning and a lot of work, hard work, in getting America to literally fall, to collapse, to implode, to be no more. And we're helping them along. We cannot continue to help. We have to stop. We have to fight. And we have to do everything we possibly can in getting back to where we need to be, so that maybe other good religious leaders might help, you know, raise the mores. If you understand enlightenment is about doing things that is better, that raises our standards and our quality, not lowers us. And we're going to get into some of that and how statism and the progressive secularism and how they're literally using things to undermine us. There's that word again, literally. But they are. They're doing things that are actually undermining us. And I'll get into that. So let me catch up on editorializing some recent news. And just literally this weekend, the Virginia governor, after actually jumping out into infanticide and saying we're going to be doing these things because it elevates our society by killing children. Now, all of a sudden, these racist pictures come out. It's kind of interesting how this is all kind of coming forward. It was on his page. It was clearly on the page that he was supposed to own and control. He even admitted to doing the blackface thing and so forth. I'm not one to say, you know, shame, shame, shame. We all make mistakes. I've actually, you know, when I wrote my book and I talked about and how I presented the concept of Republic Review, I was not aware and sensitive to those organizations out there that start twitching when you mention the convention word. And so I had no idea that I would create such, you know, bias and such I can't come up with a really good word other than the fact that negativity and how they're using all sorts of things to try to maintain their relevance. Bottom line is, if you really look at Republic Review and you look at the organizations that I've talked about before that are just, you know, pointing the finger at me saying I'm a backdoor to the Convention of States, they can't prove that. As a matter of fact, if you go through my argument, I actually lay that to waste, but they don't want to point you to that. They want to point to this historical stuff. And so I understand that there have been people that, you know, have made mistakes. There's people that, you know, if you just go through some families, you know, and you look at the age of the oldest child, there's a good chance there may have been a mistake there. But they did the right thing and they moved forward and they cleaned up, you know, their mess, if you want to call it that. Or if they like I said, they stood up, they cowboyed up. Now, I don't think that this Virginia governor is cowboying up when he's saying that he's the champion for infanticide, but, you know, also admits to putting, you know, black polish on his face to do a Michael Jackson thing. But here in around the same time, there was a picture of him with or somebody with black faced polish on their face along with the KKK. I mean, come on. It was around the same time and it was on his page. Anyway, I don't want to judge the man, but, you know, there is a hypocrisy amongst the socialists, and we'll talk about that when we come right back. Thank you so much. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So as you can tell, there have been plenty on the Democratic side that have, you know, like the Black Caucus and so forth, that have come out against the governor and said he needs to step down, period. He needs to step down, especially when he admitted to, and then all of a sudden he had to walk that all back. And so I just want to point out the hypocrisy and how the Democrats constantly use race baiting and so forth. And again, there are those that are calling for it, but I think they've set the stage for what is the perfect pulling the sheet or the tablecloth out from underneath everybody so that nobody notices anything. I don't think this is about racism, and why is it that so many people are so upset over that vice's murder and infanticide? I mean, racism is absolutely abominable, but really, it's worse than killing innocent babies? Literally, at 9 months, right before, I mean, the way they talked about this, that is morally reprehensible. I mean, I cannot understand why there's more people that saying, forget about that. We didn't elect you to, you know, to violate the, you know, the fundamental basics of life. Anyway, I'm just going to point out the hypocrisy that is just abounding on the social progressives. They have no moral compass, and they will find any way possible to be able to maintain their cling to power. Now let's talk about the Fed. I mean, just recently the Fed claims that they're going to be patient moving forward, not going to raise the rates. I have plenty of friends that are, you know, financially smart And they're literally pointing the fact that we are going to have a financial collapse, or the dollar will collapse by the end of the year. That we're, you know, they're pitching doom and gloom before 2020. This may be the demise of Trump, that the globalists are actually, if they believe that Trump is going to thwart their plans, they will pull the trigger on the dollar. So the question is, are you in that camp? Do you think that's going to happen? I'm not seeing that. I honestly believe we're going to, you know, get past 2020 before we really have to be forced into a political decision where our political opportunists, those who have supposedly been elected to represent us, throw us under the bus. But let's talk about real quick Venezuela and how all of a sudden things have really changed. And the fact that we're deploying troops down into Panama with Bolton and his little, you know, message on his pad, that was not an accident. I find it interesting how libertarians are calling out neocons and war hawks and all of that type of stuff, regime change or meddling. And I'm going, are you kidding me? The lack of humanitarianism in Venezuela and what the heck is going on, standing by is absolutely immoral. We have a Monroe Doctrine that is a part of our founding. We have a responsibility for individual liberty. As long as we're not truly setting in place, it's not like it, I don't believe the opposition was injected by Trump. I don't believe that there is some long-term controls. We have a moral responsibility in helping Venezuela become the great nation that it was. If you want to say it was a great nation, I just don't think that any of the Central American, Latin American countries, they may have had a robust economy, but freedom and individual liberty was not necessarily the highlight of any of those countries. I mean, I've heard lots of people talk well about Venezuela, but you got to remember that they do not have, and they had no things like the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, that guaranteed inalienable rights for the people. That's why they've been thrown back and forth and to and fro. So I kind of have to side, and I support the concept of getting rid of communism and getting rid of that type of subjugation that comes with communism and statism. I think that we have, again, the moral responsibility to step in and support a full regime change. And we need to send the message to China and the Soviet Union, you know, that they're getting back together again. It looks like they're putting the band back together. And the rest of the world, and say, look, we stand for individual liberty. And in the Western Hemisphere, we're not going to allow you to intermingle and or meddle. You know, you got to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis was under that same umbrella of the Monroe Doctrine. It's time to start revisiting that and getting back into the concepts of that. And I know I didn't mention this before, but this is something that's just recently happened. The League of United Latin American Citizens have filed a federal lawsuit seeking to bar the state of Texas from moving forward with a probe that would question the citizenship of over 100,000 state-registered voters. Now, you can't even question the legitimacy of a voter here in any state in America. Are you kidding? Folks, they're trying to get to a point where we have to accept whatever rules that they want to make as they go along. What is it going to take for you to realize that they're literally doing all sorts of things that children will try to do to take control? We've got to start waking up. You've got to start standing up and getting involved one way or the other. Again, constitutionclub.ning.com. Email me, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. How about, let's look at the history of the, you know, because with the Stone takedown, I got to go back and look at the macro history of jackbooted thug tactics that the FBI has used over the history of our nation. And, you know, the past few times of literally going after Trump's associates to squeeze Trump and his friends, I'd like you to cite any type of similar tactic when the Kenneth Starr investigation went after the Clintons like that. Now, there were jackbooted thug tactics that were used by the IRS during the exact same time to take down Clinton's opponents. But that's kind of ironic, isn't it? Because that even happened under Obama. Remember all of these organizations like the We the People Foundation? They're still being suppressed by the IRS. And supposedly, Trump has actually changed that policy. But why is it that the We the People Foundation is still going through court processes over their 501c3 status when there has been no evidence? I mean, I know that they have been thwarting their efforts for like 11 years now, or maybe nine. But nevertheless, the point is that we're actually becoming the targets of the state. And we know this. And I was hoping that, you know, Trump would have at least had this policy actually put into place and checked so that we would not be the victims of fascism, of the secular progressive fascism. And so bottom line, the secular progressives are the brutal fascist communists that we don't want in this nation. That's what happens when they take over. History proves this, empirical data. Go look at what Pol Pot did. Go look at how Stalin and Lenin and Mao, how they treated the enemy. They were brutal. They have no tolerance or respect for individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And so they see no need to treat anyone with dignity. They don't believe that they need to treat what they perceive as an enemy to the state with respect and dignity. So what's your take? What's your take on that? Is that good? Well, if you think that's bad, then what's it going to take to get you involved? Because they're getting closer and closer to having full control. We need your help. Okay, so Congress also, just in the recent news, has passed and actually President Trump signed it. It's called the Rapid DNA Act that allows police to collect and test DNA immediately following arrest. Without any conviction of a crime, they can now have all sorts of insights and actually in the booking process within several states. This is going to become a very bad thing because they're going to create a DNA database that's going to start this year. And those who are suspects at the time of arrest, even though they're still innocent of any crime, will be forever linked to the criminal database by assessing this DNA, by putting it into their database. And the government will have data on everyone's, or at least all of these criminals, supposed criminals, air quotes there, ancestry, appearance, medical history, inclination to accept authority, those types of things and traits that they're already being able to garner out of DNA. Really? This is a good thing? I asked Trump supporters, what do you think about that? What's it going to take, folks? People are saying Trump's buying his time. I even say that because he's not coming after us directly as Obama and everybody else. But I don't think he's not recognizing that these things are still in the process of coming and putting the noose around our neck. I don't understand why he's signing these things. I have no idea why we're in this position. But I do have one question. What is it going to take before these nooses that are around our necks get tightened to where we can't escape? What is it going to take to get you involved? You have the chance now. You have the ability now to actually stand up and start supporting something that actually has not even a hope, an idea, actually a tangible solution. I'm here telling you exactly what that tangible solution is. That tangible solution is auditing the authority and the constitutionality of many things that the federal government does not have the constitutional grounding for. That's where the states step up and call for republic review. We need your help. And I'm G.R. Mobley. I am reclaiming the republic, and I need your help as well. God bless. I'll be back tomorrow.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.